Let's get it going in here. Podcast, we're national, worldwide. Here we go.
I find it, anything you say is very interesting.
Well, thank you.
We go, I don't want a finger paint, bitch. I'm getting our horses back. Ha!
That's the coolest thing you've ever done.
Right there.
The woman that I think about when I'm having sex with my wife.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm a little creeped out.
Yeah, I don't know how you did that. Yeah, I'm sure you have very loving, tender, romantic, thoughtful, meaningful sex with your wife. Can that
I do.
Be a drop?
It makes me so happy every time I heard it.
Hello and welcome to the Second Funniest Podcast, episode number 304. My name is Justin Worsham. I am your host. With me, as always, is the one, the only, the early adopter, the KevinMiller.com.
I say sex a lot in the opening. It's like three times.
That's my doing.
Well done.
I did that.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah. Well, we talked about how you talk a lot in the opening.
Yeah.
And I
think about my wife while I'm having sex with her.
Yeah.
That's who I was talking to.
I want to know who the girl, though, is. Who is the woman that you think about when you have sex with your wife?
Oh, you have to wait till next week.
Have you gotten to the... No, we can't talk about it. Because your father-in-law listens.
30 seconds in.
Yep. And shut it down. Shut it down.
Lots to talk about today.
Oh, boy.
Got lots going
on. I want to get one thing out there.
Yeah.
I know a lively fellow who is really quite unique. He's small and smart and yellow with a rodent-like physique.
This is not what I wanted to get out there.
He doesn't play the shallow and he never deigns to speak.
This is classic.
He is the strong man's Liberello and they just call him the Sneak.
You don't remember the Ballad of the Sneak?
No, I don't. Yeah. Giving you, I have one thing to say about giving you an audio feed from your computer.
Yeah.
It's a trap!
That's what I have to say about that. I'm so happy that I was able to grab that, by the way. This is all from Joseph Behrs doing, really, weirdly enough, a bonus episode of the Dad Podcast that I do. And we got up the Admiral Akbar because the old Mississippi rebels or whatever, they wanted to change their mascot because they thought the... I think it's the rebels or something, but basically their mascot was a plantation owner, and they're like, that's not okay in the modern era.
Yeah.
So the students banded together and actually got a petition, and because not everybody was involved in the student activities thing, and nobody knew it was even happening, they got it cleared that Admiral Akbar was going to be. And they're like, they have a Division I like football team and everything, so it would have been all these people.
Seems... like a mistake.
Yeah.
My sister said that she was going to, I think it's in Tennessee, and they wanted to change the mascot from Seminoles to something else, and they said it's culturally insensitive, and the Seminole tribe said, no, you can keep it. We're cool with that. We survived your occupation, and our tribes still thrive today. So, yeah, you could be... the Seminoles. We're cool with that.
Yeah, go for it. I was right. I was just checking to make sure it was the Ole Miss Rebels, and they passed it. And then the school board went back and said, no, we will not be known as the Ole Miss Akbars. And there's their t-shirts you can get. But it's not a trap.
That's like, right. It's a new era. That was Ballad of the Sneak from HomestarRunner.com. You didn't know that.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, you did just say it.
Yeah, but
so
I didn't
know.
I didn't credit where it was from. The Hilarious Boys. At Homestar,
I knew when I heard Strong Bad that it was from Homestar Runner.
I
used to do the email show all the time online.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they don't. They used to put them out as a video podcast, but then they got behind. Or they
no, they just sort of. I think they're working on something else because they were doing it regularly for years and years and years, and had all sorts of steam and popularity behind them, huge merchandise. And then they made a video game, which is right now available on PlayStation,
which I've heard is horrible.
No, who said it was horrible?
Some guys on another podcast that I listen to.
It depends on what you want out of it. If you want an elongated episodes of the Strong Bad email answer show, funny. If you want a video game, not good.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. They were saying it's not a fun game.
No.
And they said it's basically you go around and have them walk up to things and tell them to interact with it.
That's
and he
what
says
it is.
A funny line.
But that's what that style of game. I mean, it's true to the genre.
Which they talk. They also all played that. What is it? Oh, gosh, that's going to bug me. Sam and Max, isn't it?
Yeah, same.
The episodic
same
comedy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have a, it's like this film noir dog detective and a crazy,
which is based on a comic strip that's been around for
forever.
Eons. Yeah.
So you play these games, and I was like, oh, I'll check out a comedy game. And I was actually playing it in front of Natalie, and I bought the first episode or whatever of it, and was playing it. She's like, what is this? I go, oh, it's like a comedy video game. So I figured I'd check it out because it's supposed to be funny or whatever. So I played it for probably 10 to 15 minutes. And she goes, when's it going to get funny? And I'm like, well, there are funny lines, but just because it's not making us cry.
It should, though. Ghostbusters, the video game.
Right? That was very funny.
I definitely laughed out loud at that.
It's an interesting question. What is the funniest video game?
Ghostbusters Online was the only game that I've ever
Ghostbusters
liked.
Online?
I'm sorry. Ghostbusters Online would be a sweet game. You go to Ghostbusters Academy, go around real world cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, and bust ghosts.
Yeah.
How the F is this not a game?
Shh, we got to edit this out now so we can make it a game.
Yeah, because I said
make
F,
it a big game on Little Big Planet 2.
Yo, there it is.
I'm trying to think. Remember, what was that game? What was that game with the, oh, crap. It was the guy that kind of looked like Patrick from SpongeBob that was on, I think, Sega Genesis.
Seaman.
No. That was kind of funny. I remember, that's going to bother
serious?
Me.
There was a game with a star, a talking
Not
starfish?
A star, but he was like pink and like triangular shaped. And it was like,
Kirby?
I want to say, it's not Earthworm Jim. I keep wanting to call it Earthworm Jim, but there was a game where there were two characters and you were fighting aliens, if I remember correctly. And
Oh, you're talking about Toe Jam and Earl.
Yes.
Yeah, that game was sweet.
That one I remember making me laugh a lot when I played it.
You were a kid.
Yeah.
Because there weren't necessarily jokes in it. I mean, it was like a wacky interpretation of humans. So there was like the woman pushing around her son in a shopping cart. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be Earth. It was like Earth on crack or something. It was a good game, though. Toe Jam and Earl. Let's listen to the music of that.
What is your obsession with the music?
I'm trying to make this a multimedia experience.
Why don't we just make it a content experience instead of finding music?
No, this is more fun.
All right. You know me.
Yeah.
I'm always going to say, hey, this is what I think, and then I'm always going to go along with whatever you say.
Well, I like that. You give me the freedom to be myself.
I do.
You know? This is track number 188.
Track?
Music of video games, Toe Jam and Earl.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like there were 188 songs from Toe Jam and Earl. Yeah. They misaligned their priorities then.
Oh, yeah. This takes me back. See, this is why I wanted to do it, because this immediately takes
me back. Oh, I see what
you're
saying. Like, you feel that 8-bit sound with... This was 16...
this was on the Genesis.
Genesis,
yeah.
So that's 16,
this,
right?
Their 16-bit system. Man, the hours I spent listening
to
this.
Yeah, and it's just like this diagonal-shaped world that you would walk around on. Like,
it was like Hubert on crack.
It was a fun game. I really liked it.
And it was like Seek Out. There was another game that was terrible at the same generation. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures.
Never played it.
You shouldn't have. The concept was you go around to different lands, different time eras, and you have to find objects from different people in order to get them to help you. Like Shakespeare wants a skull so that he can do his production of Hamlet. But to find the objects in the world, like that's a basic video game premise, but to find the objects in the game, you jump into bushes. So along the edges of the maps, all the map of the entire game are bushes, and you just wander around hitting jump. You jump into the bush and you jump out. You jump into the bush.
And sometimes you'll jump into a bush and come out with the item that you
need. And most of the time you won't, because all the entire perimeter of...
So it literally is like turning over every card in a deck of cards
exactly,
that you have to do.
Trying to find it. And there's some other little things to do in the universe, but you can't leave, if I'm remembering correctly.
Annoying.
You couldn't leave the level until you got to the point where you remember Nintendo Power Magazine, when they came out, the maps were like pointing to... That's all the guide was... Here's the skull. Here's the key for Ben Franklin. Like, that's all. That's all the game
was.
I
do remember. I never played it, but I remember. Didn't this game get panned, like, by people?
It was horrible.
Yeah, everybody was like.
But, you know, that was the time when there was absolutely no money in franchise-based games. And now you're seeing games like Ghostbusters that are better. But Back to the Future was
Ghostbusters is definitely one of the exceptions to the rule in the license or franchised games.
Of course. And I hope it's the trend, the new trend. But the Back to the Future game was just as bad. You ran around. You were doing a platformer like Super Mario Brothers, and you had to collect clocks that were hanging in the air, and if you didn't collect them, you'd fade out of existence.
Oh, jeez.
It was terrible.
Oh, gosh. I heard somebody was talking about that Back to the Future game. What was the other game? There was a game, but that was on the original Nintendo, that Friday the 13th. I played for all of 10 minutes, and it was like impossible. Every time Jason showed up, you died, and it was over. Like, there was no way to defeat him or run away. Like, it was just, boom, he's gone. And
well, what we have been talking about is the most popular video game that I'm in is Sly Cooper. But the most unpopular video game I've ever been a part of, we have not talked about a whole lot.
What is that? I'm curious.
Tales of Eternia.
What the hell is that?
We haven't talked about Tales of Eternia at all. Oh, man. It was
real
terrible.
Quick while you're pulling that up. Yeah. I want to tell this because we did. I remember when I used to do the voiceovers for video games for Webtoon when we both worked there, too. I play just about every black character that came across the steps.
Not
of
Not every, but that's what you got cast as.
I'm sorry. It wasn't like I did say that wrong. Yeah. If a game came across and there were black people in it, Justin Worsham obviously will. No, it was every job that I happened to book was playing an African American.
You were playing
character.
Black. Yeah.
Like, for instance,
your Venn diagram was drawn improperly there.
All the black passengers in Crazy Taxi 3. Uh-huh. That's me. I'm Garam in both Jet Grind Radio and Jet Set Future. I'm a black marine bot in Unreal Tournament way back in the day. But the one game that I was so happy because I felt like it was finally me getting away from being the various characters or the black guy was Motor Mayhem.
Yeah.
And I was so excited when we did the recording for that because I was the play-by-play guy for a vehicle combat game. And it was like done like ESPN and I was so excited. And I went out and I bought the game because it wasn't like we were significant enough where they would give us the game. You know what I mean?
Still not. But.
And I popped it in. I was like, oh, I'm so excited. And probably, I think we did 4 days of recording on all of the audio for that. And then they brought us back in a couple weeks later because they wanted to do like digital Christmas cards.
Right,
that was when those were first becoming popular.
Yeah.
So we did all these crazy things for Mother's Day and everything like that because they thought it was going to be huge. And every ounce of dialogue that I did was just in the opening like intro to the game. Like,
that's
you pop the game in and then there's like this ship with all these TVs on it. And it's not even like my voice is even present. Like, you just hear it like I'm one of the 40,000 channels.
It was you and Casey Robertson being like color and play-by-play.
And I stand by this. Mm. I think that originally they thought they could write into the programming like a Madden-type play-by-play color.
No. Yes, I know what you're saying. That was Greg called us in to have us read for that. And we watched the video and did a play-by-play for the scene.
That was the audition. I remember that.
That was the audition. And then they submitted that to the developer saying, we think this would be a great concept for the voice for this game. They said, there is no way to technologically build this into the game because you're talking about real-time reactions to events. No, like, that's not the game we're developing. Like, that's a whole nother thing. You still don't even see a game that does that well.
Madden does it.
That well, though?
Yes.
Like, they do.
Not initially, but now they do.
Do they? Oh
yeah. Within the last 2-3 years, Madden has gotten... I mean, it's not... Here's the thing. It does it create a completely unique and spontaneous experience every single time?
No.
Every time you get a first down, there's probably 4 or 5 responses, but... Does it? Back in the day, there was 3 responses, and you were just like, "Shut up, John Madden."
You're running that play too often.
Yes,
that was about it.
Now they have Chris Collinsworth and another guy that I can't pull the name right now. I'm sorry, but
does Madden not do it anymore?
No, he doesn't do it. Since they got rid of him, it's become a lot better.
Oh,
and it's not because of, obviously it's not because of.
Is it still called Madden?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's
and he's not even affiliated. I mean, his picture's on it, maybe.
Mm.
Not even.
It's just his name.
Yeah, and he still, I'm sure, has some kind of consulting idea in it, but. But yeah, like that's really what it was done, and I thought that's what they wanted to do because the way they were directing us when we did the like beyond the audition, the actual recording was okay. Somebody's going to do this, and then you're going to say this.
Yeah,
and it just seemed like so much effort to put into something that was put off in the distance.
Yeah, I think that
for 30 seconds
that might have been a post production choice. Like
that's
they
what
ran
I mean,
out of that much detail. Like there might have been more interaction or cut scenes between. Levels and maybe it didn't test well.
Because that was the other thing. We did full bios for each and intros for each of the characters. nothing in the game.
Yeah, you were a commentator. Casey was a former player.
He was
right?
He was the color guy,
yeah.
And I was the play-by-play guy. And it was so much fun to do. And it was the biggest disappointment in the world when I got that game. I was like,
well, not as big as Tales of Eternia, because I got cast as this lead character. Thought I was the shizzle. I was getting tons of cash to come in and record for several hours. And then the game came out, and I was stoked. At E3 that year, there were pictures of the characters, big as life, throughout the display and everything. I took pictures of me next to it, like, this is going to be cooler than Sly Cooper. And even though he was in development at the time. And so the game came out.
Wait, so had you been cast in this at all or no?
Oh, yeah.
Sly Cooper, I mean.
No, not yet. Okay. That was about 2 years out. But so the game comes out, and I go and I buy it at the game store, and it's my first. It was probably the third game I've ever been in. So I was hamming it up. I'm like, yeah, this is me. This character right here on the cover, that's me. And the guy's like, oh, wow, that's great. And I think he even said something like, I heard it's not a very good game. And I'm like, oh, really?
How could that be? I wouldn't understand. Be associated with such projects.
Yeah, do you know who I am? I will be Sly Cooper.
I'm the Tom Hanks of video games.
So I pick up, there's a magazine that had it as well. Right on the cover was Tales of Eternia, like the big picture there. Yeah. So I'm like, well, I'm going to pick this magazine up as well and read what it's all about. Which is surprising that it got on the cover. I went home and read the magazine, and it lists a game and talks about the franchise and everything, and then it gets to the voice acting, and it says voice acting from hell.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm like, that sucks. And I pop in the game and I listen to the first scene and remember the recording. I'm like, I don't remember being terrible. Like I've got the job, how can it be so bad? And it was the way that they directed us through it, and I think I've talked about this before, but they didn't give us context for scenes. So I'm reading my lines, and it says something like, the line just says, oh, she was looking for her bow. I think it was like a dog. Oh, she was looking for her bow. But I didn't know that the other actor who had recorded 2 days before me said the line that I'm reacting to like this. Where did she go? So you hear her go, where did she go?
Oh, she's looking for her bow.
Yeah, like I heard and I'm like, oh, that's voice acting from hell. I got it instantly.
That's what that sounds
that's
like.
That's terrible. And I wanted to write it. It wasn't
like a purgatory. It was real.
It was real hell. And I wanted to write the editors, I should have, and said, that's really voice direction from hell, because now if I went back and listened to it, you'd be able to see, well, the actors are delivering the lines in a clear way that sounds accurate, but that just that the scene is out of context and makes no sense at all. So here's, I think this is from Tales of Eternia.
Eternia.
Let's see. There's like a blurriness on the screen. There's a flashlight being passed around. They're looking over different trees. Now it's a cutaway to a guy walking down this, isn't it? My brother was a huge gamer, and he tried to play it the whole way through because he liked that kind of game anyway. And he said one night he was playing it. It's a total Japanese game. He said that he had saved, and then he accidentally fell into this battle with Death showed up. And so he's battling Death, and no matter what he did, he couldn't battle this character named Death. He just lost. Lose, and it was the only save. And he said he'd spent a half hour trying to do this, and then he gave up and went online and looked and found out that there's a 1 in 1% chance that you'll find Death in the game and lose. And he's like, so I'm done.
He had the 1 in 1% chance
that you would find Death, and just the, some random point in the game you may encounter Death.
Why, who?
And lose.
Who sits at a table?
The Japanese.
And says, let's just randomly end it.
Yeah.
On some people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And had he not saved it where he could have gone back earlier and then avoided it. But he had saved it in such a way that no matter what, he was going to have to battle Death. And
so like he saved it as he's walking down the hallway to unknowingly.
Pretty much. Yeah. And then to come upon it. So.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yeah. Voice acting from hell. I wonder if we can see any of my scenes here.
Maybe this is a problem, is that there's no voicing in this, and that's why they think it's hellish.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Maybe they cut all your voice out.
It's just so far.
Because that just sounds like a online wedding.
Oh, yeah, this is the music, too. It's pretty great. Oh, that was me.
Oh.
I think that was me.
No, it sounded like a chick going, eh?
I'm looking up a treehouse. This is all digital.
Are you playing the game?
Oh, yeah. On YouTube.
Oh.
Yep. That was me.
Is that?
Yeah.
It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
No voice direction.
That's voice acting from hell. Today, nothing hard about that. Thanks, Sly Cooper playing another game.
I have to admit it. You sure are handy with your sword.
Yeah.
Sure, wow. Surprised to see you here.
Oh man, this is terrible.
Yeah, Lily, I've been busy in the fields. Reed?
Yeah.
Sorry, about that one.
Is it something
like this place ever since we were small?
Yep. I think that's Therese.
So, what's up today? Playing hooky?
Wow, I can't listen to that. Okay, that's me in Tales
of
Eternia.
You want to hear him talk a little bit more?
All right, sure.
Of course not. There's something different about the sky.
Yeah, sure.
So I came to take a look.
You're pretty handy with your sword. Really, you think so? Okay. Where's your dog?
He's just looking for his bow.
Bone.
Ooh, yeah, right?
Tales of Eternia. You cannot get it in your local stores because it's bad.
That's right, kids. Sit in your room late at night and hear two little childish people. Yeah. Huh? What's that? So what are you doing later today?
I don't know. Nothing.
Playing hooky?
I like the other one, but this one's much better.
They're both pretty great.
This is actually a sound effect we use to lead into whenever we're talking about sex on the Dad Podcast.
Pretty great.
So one of us will say, hey, I got lucky last night, and the rest is, as they say, history.
Got it. Well, that's Tales of Eternia is available. They released
don't,
it, it
no,
looks like,
come on.
On the PSP.
No,
yeah,
don't tell people to go get this horrible game.
No, I'm surprised. They re-released it on the
they
PSP.
They re-released it. Maybe that's the problem. The screen was too big and the controls were too easy.
I'm going to get this game.
No,
I remember,
Kevin.
I remember enjoying the gameplay in the same sense of Chrono Trigger, in that the way you battled was a little like Mortal Kombat. So instead of like a turn-based RPG, your characters were on, you know, profile fighting against it, and you'd come back and you could hit your sword and then jump back and someone else would hit him with magic and go back and forth. It wasn't too bad, that aspect of it. The story was Japanese and acted by a young, ignorant Kevin Miller.
Ignorant?
No.
Just poorly produced. I mean, it was a little like this episode.
Oh,
the second funny.
That
podcast.
Stung me. I don't know how I got brought into this. I wasn't casting that thing. There were no black people.
You did a great job.
There were no black people in that game, so I was not brought in. If there were black people, then I would have been brought in. That's just how the cookie crumbles
for the game
for
in general.
Guy.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. What are you looking up? You trying to?
I just
up?
Made a mistake. Oh. I was trying to do something that I shouldn't have been doing now.
What are you doing? What's going on over there?
I was trying to bring that sound effect that I just played from the workspace that I... this is horrible. Now I'm feeling guilty that people are listening to this.
You should just pause it.
No, I don't need to pause it. I don't need to do that right now. I don't. How important is it going to be that we have some kind of porno music backdrop in the next 45 minutes of this show? Because if you say pretty important, then I will say, okay, I will make that happen.
People have listened to the show long enough to know when you're stalling.
Huh?
They can tell you're stalling.
I wasn't stalling.
You're just stalling because you're clearly working on your computer.
Damn it. I picked the wrong number.
Did you assign two hotkeys to the same number?
Yeah. Oh, that was close.
I'm
that
still
sucks.
Muted, aren't I? You should unmute me.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I am. I'm muted.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
You sure?
Yep. Yep. This is a great show. I apologize
Best
to everybody.
Best show ever.
Oh, that's not working. How come? There we go. Yeah, this is my favorite ant.
I'm
here's the other
muted.
Thing I wanted to talk about. What did you say?
I'm definitely muted.
You were not muted.
I have this hilarious thing.
Check
to
your
do.
Computer.
Yeah.
Look, it's you that? That's you turned up. Check your computer.
Okay, well, what's Biznatch.
Did you hit mute on your end? Oh, what happened there?
That file plays. What doesn't this one play?
Maybe somebody took the voice acting from hell off the internet.
Aww.
That's hurtful, right? About the production
no,
note.
No, you're right.
Now that's back in your face about the words are happening at you.
You know, we really got to stop doing two episodes back to back.
Why?
I'm just saying it makes
Here's
us
the
a
thing.
Little tired.
If I would have known 3 hours before we had to do two episodes back to back.
It's all my fault.
Well,
I know.
It's not all your fault. It's also my fault. By letting you take control of booking a guest, I have failed.
I was on vacation.
I'm kidding.
Listen, your passive aggressiveness will not.
Passive aggressive implies aggression. Do you think I really care? I'm still having a good time.
Yeah.
The problem is we're both staring at our computers instead of staring at the show.
No, this is real to me. I'm fully.
You're searching for some kind of 8-bit video game music to play as an underbed while you relive some childhood memory of some shitty game that you played in 1989. Is this Double Dragon?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. Worth it, right?
Why can't I pull it? Oh, X-Men.
Yeah.
The animated series.
That's right.
Speaking of which, although it's not Marvel, but I gave it to you, so I'm very curious. I think we should talk about it, but I got on Netflix, if you're a Netflix member, definitely check out The Secret Origin of DC Comics.
Can you say that word while the X-Men theme song is playing?
I think an angel lost its wings, but I think I can.
Like Angel, the X-Men?
Yes. The Angel, I meant to say.
He's very happy about that.
He is? He didn't want to have his wings?
No.
Check out Secret Origins of DC Comics. He just got them back.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, fuck you, Angel. DC. Harsh.
Maybe he became a DC character.
Oh.
Can they transfer over?
You think you'd be angry? Oh, why don't they have that as a fighting game? Marvel versus DC.
Well, they could, but now that's essentially Warner versus Disney.
Yeah. Who wouldn't want to see that, huh? Some frog taking on a mouse? I think I know who's going to win. You know, there's an African bullfrog that actually eats a mouse. So I think we know who won.
Have you seen this week?
Huh? It's been very busy while the kids
you're
at that time.
Ricky Gervais.
I finished Assassin's Creed early. I'm a little like Ricky Gervais. What does
from
that
the
mean?
Golden Globes. Just these, like, out of nowhere shots in the face. Why would you see Cher? It's not 1975, but he said it with an English accent.
But see, the thing, because he got a lot of flack for that, because I heard somebody, hey, get ready for some gay moments, because here it comes.
Yeah.
I was at my hairdresser salon music? Today.
Oh, nice.
And one of the other ladies was saying to her salon master that she's like, did you think he was mean-spirited? And he was like, yes, I thought he was rude. And here's the thing. It was in the beginning,
talk
like the first
one.
Couple, like the monologue was harsh, but it was funny.
It got you interested.
Yes. And then after that, it like the first couple presenters, but then once he did two more after that, then it was like, and then after once like Robert Downey Jr. said, like commented on it and said, despite the, you know, cynicism and criticism and mean undertone, you know, I think it's a pretty good show. What would you guys say? You know, everybody claps. And then when you go after Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, well, the Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, I thought was redeeming, because if you haven't seen it, I'm sorry, I'm talking like everybody's seen the Golden Globes, but Ricky Gervais, when he introduced people, he said horrible, horrible things where, and it was a funny bit to name like bombs that actors had made, which I thought was a great idea.
Of course
but then
you do that.
He would also add on to that where, because he started talking about Robert Downey Jr., where he's like, you may remember him from such movies as Iron Man, but then he said, like, Kiss Kiss Bang, and he's like, are these pornos? And then he said, like, one other one that sounded like a porno. He's like, what? This guy's ridiculous. Or you also...
That's like a little roasty.
Yeah, then he goes, or from even further back, you may remember him from the Betty Ford or the Los Angeles Community Hospital for Drug Addiction or something
like
that.
That's only something you could say at a roast or if you're good buddies with him.
And then he goes, Robert Downey Jr. And then it was just weird. Like, because then what the problem is that for the presenters is that they kind of have to come out and now read off the script because there's like a time thing.
Yeah.
And then it's also, you're not supposed to make it about you as the host. You're just supposed to move things along. But then there was a moment, too, that Ricky Gervais said, I think, in the show where people started booing a little bit or awing. And he's like, I told them. And that was all he said. But I think he essentially said, I said that if you want me to come, because he hosted him last year. And I didn't see him last year. But I think that he did, because he's the reason why I watched this year.
Got it.
Because I heard that he had said some pretty weird and off, you know, because he said it's live. What are they going to do?
Right.
And I like the commercials or whatever.
See,
so.
But the thing about Ricky Gervais, he's at a point now where he's actually a credited performer. But we both know that he won the lottery, that he's just a guy out in England who had a wacky idea and came up through that, kind of backdoored his way into it. Don't get me wrong. He's very funny, has some great ideas. But if you watch any of the outtakes of the original Office, he's a jackanape, like cannot focus to save his life. He's pompous, jerky, and He's like, it was be as if you and I got to host the Golden Globes, like that's
yeah,
the
without
level.
A bit, like we'd already be, you'd be playing 8-bit sound effects there too.
Yeah, like. Exactly. Like that's all it is, and that's what his career looks like. He's just sort of goofing around, and people love him. We love him, but you know, he's not Bill Murray, who you know slugged away at becoming or Steve Martin, who you know, just became an expert at comedy and worked at it for a long time and worked on project after project. Ricky Gervais has like one. It was The Office.
Well, he's had all, I think it is unfair to say he's just had one. He's had a series of successes in that he made The Office. Yeah. That was big. Then Extras, also very also successful, great. But it's also his fan base. Like there's a particular set of people that like him, but like a Bill Murray, everybody likes Bill Murray for the most part.
But he's a little like Dane Cook, who was in the right place at the right time. He had the right idea of The Office at a time where that kind of television was something we wanted to watch. Had he come up with that show concept...
And nothing was being done like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. If Friends was burning up the air and you tried to put up The Office, no one would have watched it because we all wanted to watch a show like Friends. In a world post Friends, we wanted to see something new, different.
Have you listened to his podcast at all?
Ricky Gervais's? Yeah, we watch a little. It's just them interviewing
Carl.
Their buddy. Yeah.
So what it is that they found this character who I think, because he had a radio show in England, and I guess this guy was associated with the radio show, and he found that this guy was just a blittering idiot but had opinions about everything. So now the show is just based on him interviewing him, and I bought all of them because I like listening to him.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he does have comedic moments within it. And because my personal opinion is of him is that I think he's very funny. And I think he knows how to create stuff that, like, I really like The Invention of Lying. Yeah. I thought that was a great concept for a movie. I thought it got, and I'm not even a religious person, but I did think it got a little heavy handed about religion at the end, I thought was weird.
Why it's bad.
He essentially said that. Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen The Invention of Lying, but he essentially said that The Invention of Lying was the creation of Christianity and religion.
Wow.
That's the very first lie that man learned to tell.
Wow.
That's what, like, and the idea is that by him learning to lie, he uses the analogy. It starts with him saying that it doesn't seem like it's going to get that religious oriented, but he starts the thing where his grandmother's passing away, and then she says, I'm just afraid of not existing anymore. And he says, oh, no, that's not how it works. Nobody told you. He said, you're going to go to this place where it's just this beautiful, happy place where you just feel nothing but good. Mm. And that was I think that's like the first, he learned how to lie about something else that was smaller. And then that was like a big one that somebody else heard. And that's what blew him up. So he started lying and it was only kind of taking care of him. Like it was making him successful in his job and everything like that. And with this chick and everything. But then when he lied to his mom, everybody was like, how does this guy know what happens when we die? And then he's like, everybody wants to know. So he sits in his place and I'm now rehashing the plot.
It's brilliant. But I wonder, not being a super sociological expert, I wonder if that kind of story comes out of an English person because they have such deep roots in the Dark Ages. And I wonder if there's a little bit of stigmatism towards religion being the... governing point of view, because they kind of, you know, if you have the church in charge of things 500 or 600 years ago, whenever that was, I wonder if that kind of has lasting effects where everybody's still a little beat up about religion. Because if you go to Germany, patriotism is frowned upon because of World War II. And there was, you know, patriotism for Hitler all over the place.
It's,
you don't see anybody cheering for Germany during the Olympics.
I think it's more I don't think it's a British opinion. I think it's him waving his atheist flag.
Probably.
Because at the end of the Golden Globes, he said at the end of the night, he goes, I would like to thank God for making me an atheist, I think is how he put it or whatever. And I think it's another jab at people who go on award shows and thank God for the blessings that they have in their life and stuff like that.
That's pretty funny because God's going, you're not welcome. You're gonna want to put that down, buddy. Yeah.
Well, that's and I think that it unfortunately made him look as if he was just unbelievably angry for no reason. Like, and he was like, what I was starting to say is that when he brought up Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, who, you know, Woody and Buzz Lightyear, they came up at the same time, and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, these next two presenters, one of them you know from amazing films such as Forrest Gump, Apollo 13, Philadelphia story, and he rattles off all these name things or whatever.
Big.
And he goes, and the other one, and he has two cards that he's been reading credits on. And I realized, I'm like, why is he reading these credits off of these cards? And it was a setup for this joke, I think.
Wow.
Because he looks at the other one and he kind of flips it over. The other one is Tim Allen. Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, which was very funny.
That's very funny.
But the problem then was is that he created such a negative tone for the whole show that then by the time when they come out here, Tom Hanks goes, you know, many of us in this room remember when Ricky Gervais was just a pudgy little comedian, and now he's not.
Especially Tim Allen, who is a very successful comedian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, he had a humongous success, and he's one of the lesser known Seinfelds in that his television show revolutionized sitcoms in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mostly because of like the cutaways, like the wipes in between and stuff. Yeah. But
I came across the term Space Ranger today out of context of Toy Story.
I'm listening.
Yeah, exactly. I've been really enjoying.
Did you watch The Simpsons this last week?
No, not yet.
There's just this random side joke in The Simpsons where he's got a lookalike, but it just says Space Ranger on it. And it's Buzz Lightyear, but like you could see the bubble helmet and the face looks just like Buzz Lightyear, but the body is just a NASA astronaut suit. And he's like, come on, talk to me, damn it, talk to me. Like he's like hitting it on the head. It's to come to life.
That's great. You might enjoy this, retrotelevision.tv. It's a free video site with a deep library of old and new era movies and TV shows from back in the day. So I've been watching a lot of John Wayne old westerns.
Is this the one that you looked at when you did the puppet or the Super Dogs or what was your?
No, that was some. That was something else.
What was your cartoon?
Super Pups.
Super Pups. That's right.
Super Pups. They Will Fly Again. But this has got, you know, name a western, name an old sci-fi movie or a crime or a war movie, comedy, whatever. It's on this retrovision.tv. But so after watching McClintock.
Never heard of it.
Old John Wayne 1963 comedy, very funny, where he spanks his wife.
I remember the scene. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's kind of based on Taming the Shrew, but then there was a button that I could click on for Rocky Jones Crash of the Moons.
Yeah,
1954. So it says yet another episode of Rocky Jones Space Ranger. Rocky Jones was the creation of Ronald D. Reed, a Hollywood producer best known for a successful My Little Marjorie series. You remember that?
Nope.
It was so successful. So apparently they made a whole series of these.
Facetious for $1,100, please, Alex. Sarcasm for $1,200, Alex.
This show was good. What is Rocky Jones?
Space Ranger?
So yeah, Space Ranger, that's where they were pulling, was from old-timey science fiction.
But is that, do you think that's what they were really pulling
from? Absolutely. You'd be surprised.
Like you watch it and it looks like Buzz Lightyear?
Yeah, well, they're Space Rangers and that's the whole, I mean, that's what Buzz Lightyear's whole deal was all about. Yeah.
Is the villain named Zarg or something?
Zerg. No, I haven't gotten that far into it yet. I was 1 minute in.
Did you correct me with the real name?
Yeah.
See, what I was saying was that the creators of Toy Story changed Zarg into Zerg.
So this is my new Windows.
I could turn you down and still make my point.
You probably should, because that's a commercial. Keep going. 30 seconds and Space Ranger Rocky Jones will.
Yeah, here's the thing. We're going to have to work on some pre-production planning.
You know what? I asked for us to do some pre-production planning. Last year, Christmas, remember
I'm
that
sorry, I forgot.
I said we should talk about this.
I apologize that I forgot the evidently parking lot or whatever the hell you call it topic of conversation by having pre-production meetings and planning what our show is going to be about.
Well, we also had a show planned. You can come back. Here comes Crash of the Moons. So this is science fiction in the early 50s.
But nobody could see it, though. This is all they know is the music of
science. But listen to it. Does it really sound science fiction-y?
This sounds like the inspiration of the Star Trek theme, I'll be honest.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. To me, I hear no science fiction.
I didn't know until recently with the Big Bang Theory. Did you know what's that called? Oh, that's going to bother me. That instrument that you could play with your hands that's all like electronic based or whatever.
Synthesizer?
It's not a synthesizer, I think, unless that really what it is, but it's almost like you play it like a guitar.
A keytar?
No, it's not a keytar. It's. But that ooh,
oh yeah yeah, I don't know what that's called. Yep.
That's a thing where there's like a box and then there's like an antenna that comes up to your right, and where you hold your hands in relationship to these two areas
Neat.
Dictates the tone. And that original sound from the Star Trek thing is where that comes from.
And that's
here,
all
let me
real?
Find that. Oh. You talk about your Rocky French Space Ranger.
Okay, well, you got you're watching this first scene of Rocky Jones Crash of the Moons. It's pretty sweet. There's a space station that looks like something from Space Odyssey 2001, and across of that Deep Space Nine, and maybe a little bit of a tire spoke. It spins around like a dreidel in space, but then the rocket ship that comes up next to it is pretty awesome. It looks like a football, like a Nerf football.
Theremin.
Oh, yeah.
A theremin. That's
you got a little theremin for us? Can you play a little theremin?
Let's see. I was just finding out what it was. But if you play the, let's see, theremin.
Ooh,
music. There we go. Let's see who plays the theremin.
Yeah,
Pamela Kirsten plays the theremin.
Ooh, that should be good.
That's not it.
That sounds great. Sounds like the X-Men theme song.
Why do you? This better not be an intro. I'm going to be so pissed. Oh, I want to curse you out, Ted, so not much right now. Just give me the theremin music. Archive 2002. All right, play your theremin, little girl.
Sounds like
that's
a piano.
Not the theremin. That's a piano. She's shaking her hand with anticipation.
I have it here. I've already dug it up.
That violin sound is the theremin.
Oh, really?
That sound. So there.
That's beautiful. Here it is on the original Star Trek, so you can remember. If you could bring me back into this. This is a special version of the Star Trek original show theme song. Bringing it all the way back to 1977.
Is this when the Star Trek cast visited the set of Chips?
Come on. You gotta love it.
Or the Love Boat, you know, maybe? That's what they were on?
There are many things that we keep recycling. Do you think disco will ever really come back?
I know you hope so.
I do not. I find it to be the most annoying.
You spoke to my wife at the parking lot of Jerry's about how you wanted to create a combination of disco and hip-hop dancing.
I want disco moves to be done to hip-hop music. No, don't dial this out.
Sorry,
come on
now.
You have too much power with that soundboard.
Listen, I'll give it all to you. I'll give it all to you.
Let's do this in post-production. I want to have this conversation.
We have a post-production meeting now?
We probably should.
Oh, crap, Sickles.
Right?
Oh, yeah, that's some good stuff.
It's a trap!
You can't do that. You can't mix mediums like that.
Why not?
You're adding Admiral Akbar to Star Trek. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Angels lose their rings. No.
May the Force be with you.
You can't stop that.
I can't stop
Darth
it.
Darth Vader loses his metachlorian count every time.
May the Force be with you.
How did that happen? That's not supposed to be that one, too. Stupid freaking software and your stupid freaking ways.
Okay, all right. Let's just calm down.
So angry.
Yeah, I know. It's okay.
What are you playing now?
Just a little bit
people
more
gonna hate
Tales
show.
Of Eternia.
People are going to hate this show almost as Tales of Eternia. Oh, to come back to the
All right. The only other thing I wanted to play was some Sozin's comment. Did you ever watch Avatar: The Last Airbender?
No.
This is the worst.
I watched the film by M. Night Shyamalan, and there was no twist. So
the
waiting.
The twist was that they took a decent property and twisted it into the ground and strangled it to death.
Really?
I had been...
I thought it was a decent representation of what I thought a story should be.
Did you... I heard it's as if somebody had heard somebody describe a movie and then make one on their own. That's what a friend of mine described.
Like M. Night Shyamalan didn't have a chance to watch the whole series on Nickelodeon.
No. As if someone came in from another world and they said, this is what a movie looks like. And they go, okay, I'll make one. And that's what Last Airbender.
You think that's what M. Night Shyamalan does?
Yes. After he forgets every time he's made a movie or seen a movie, he then makes something. He's like, well, if we just shoot this camera at this direction, I don't know. maybe the train will jump off the screen and kill the entire audience.
Because he also set it up to where it's like there are going to be four of these movies.
There would be three, yeah.
And there was none. There's like, I don't think
it was terrible.
Do it
I never
again.
Saw. I was so excited for that film for a year and a half before it came out.
You and Jeremy Schutz are completely in
Have
harmony.
You did you watch The Last Airbender?
Yeah, I did. I got it on Blu-ray and because Jeremy.
No. The animated series, not the crappy.
Why would I watch that? I saw the movie. I've seen enough.
The movie is terrible.
Exactly. Why would you want me to watch the animated series? It's just longer.
The animated series is quality entertainment. You would like it. You would find it very interesting. Yeah, right. It's got martial arts and mysticism.
But
and...
to me, martial arts are more impressive if done on wire techniques.
No,
on that
you'll
live
you'll
action.
Be impressed because they
it's
do.
It's easy to draw a kid flapping his arms and making wind blow.
You know.
But to actually make it happen in a CG environment,
to make it happen on a computer generated version of a boy,
yeah,
much more impressive.
Yeah, if they want to really blow my mind with the Avatar cartoon, make it not a cartoon.
But see, every movie you're
or
watching
make that
now,
the twist. What if M. Night Shyamalan turned them all into cartoons at the end?
Now that I would watch, but that's not what he did. Every movie you're watching now, anyway, is a cartoon. I mean,
sorry?
Every movie you're watching is a cartoon. Do you think Avatar, do you think those giant blue guys with their tails that they stick inside their Birdmans, you think those people exist? Mm-hmm. You think they stick those on wires? No. They're cartoons.
You're trying to tell me that a world as amazingly created as Pandora with these fantastic concepts of floating mountains and rocks and amazing creatures... Yet when it comes down to the element that everybody needs is unobtainium, that's not real.
You know, that's the thing. If Last Airbender or Avatar, the not both of them were not good. If Avatar had been...
I thought you were going to say if Avatar, the not Airbender.
That would be good. If that movie had been a video game, I'd have been like, pretty decent video game. Because all the concepts were some of the most generic, basic, think floating rocks, unobtainium, comic booky nonsense. But for that to be considered the greatest movie of all time, was it nominated for Best Picture?
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. Who nominated that film for Best Picture?
I believe the Academy.
What do they know about films?
Supposedly everything.
Do they run out of movies? Is that why it got a nomination?
I think that they're finding that they cannot limit themselves to just five and they've doubled it to 10.
I think that they are afraid not enough people are watching their stupid award show, so they have to put a movie in that a lot of idiots have gone into the movie theater to see so that they can say, oh, that one should win because I've seen it.
That sounds like my wife watching the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Did I talk about that? I talked about this
you
on
did.
The other podcast, but I think I only talked about it to
you,
not on the
me,
air.
Yeah.
But that my wife watched Inception and Toy Story 3. Those were the only movies considered at the Golden Globes that my wife had seen. So therefore, if they did not win, then she was like, oh, Inception got robbed. What? You haven't seen The King's Speech? Like, what do you, what? Like, how do you? I saw The Tourist, and I know it did not deserve an award. I know it deserved everything that Ricky Gervais said horrible about it, I thought was awesome that he, because when he first started saying all that stuff, like they opened the show saying, hey, look, Brad and Angelina are here,
yeah.
And here's Johnny Depp. And then he laid into The Tourist. Like, it was like, wow.
Yeah. And it was out for like a week. There were Pandora ads for it. I'm like, this movie can't be good if you're trying to get me to watch it through Pandora.
It was not good.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, to say it was horrible is not fair.
Honest.
No. It's not fair to say it was horrible.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying
I think it should
to say that it's
Globe.
Worth being celebrated and rewarded. No, it's not. It's to me.
Now, was it nominated for anything?
Yeah, everything. Best comedy or musical, which I thought was hilarious. Like
they have a department called Best Comedy or Musical.
That's what they call anything that's not a drama. But so
anything that's not a movie.
Anything that's not a drama. Yeah. Or and Doug Benson described anything like what they mean is anything where somebody's not mentally handicapped or dying. Then that's anything that's not happening in the story is not a drama, because this is a story about a woman who is trying to help her like super secret, you know, guy who laundered money from some dude. Husband to get away from, you know, what he needs, and he tells her to find some random guy and blah blah blah,
like on 30 Rock.
It's an action movie. It's an action movie set in Europe about with spy themes. It's not a comedy.
You saw on 30 Rock when he made a movie called Hard to Watch, where he was essentially just a head at the end of the movie. Yeah.
And he was nominated for all these awards.
Yeah, exactly. Hard to Watch.
good times. Well, we're almost done.
Hey.
We made it through two episodes.
Great.
Here's what I feel.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound hurtful.
Are you going to apologize to me?
To you?
Yeah.
No.
Okay,
do I need to apologize?
I don't think so.
Okay. I was going to say that I hope that you enjoyed these past two episodes. I had a good time making them.
Yeah.
I feel like we floundered a little.
No, well, here's what I have detailed for the past two episodes, every geeky thing that we've discussed.
Oh.
So we're going to put those in the tags. And my experiment that I want to see is if we tag this geeky stuff in our second funniest geeky podcast, will the subscriptors ariser?
Ooh.
You know what? Because here's what Justin and I have noticed is that Justin is an avid podcaster listener. I think podcasts are stupid and boring because most of the podcast personalities are dry and unentertaining, especially about the material we're talking about. Typically, fanboys and fangirls have very strong opinions with very little personality.
Yeah.
And they feel very strongly about something, but they have no way to make it interesting or entertaining. We feel strongly about things, but we're also the second funniest people you're going to talk to.
Pretty freaking entertaining.
So tell your friends to subscribe to this show,
right?
Because we'll talk about whatever the hell you want us to.
You tell us.
We've literally been throwing rocks into the ocean for the past 3 years trying to figure out what's going to come back at sea level, and we'll just talk about that. Seriously, if you want this show to be about our theories on why dinosaurs aren't here, we'll talk about that every week. Just tell us. Tell us and listen.
Yeah.
Tell us and listen. That's
very
the motto
easy
for 2011.
Tell us and listen.
Tell us and listen.
I like it.
Thanks.
I'm a big fan of it.
How much time did I just burn on that monologue?
I think 3 minutes, maybe two.
Oh, that's great. How much time we got left?
10.
Oh, God. Are you reading Iron Man?
No, I need to get. I bought them all for my son.
Well, I'm all caught up on the new comic book Iron Man Legacy. And it's pretty great. The first 5 episodes take place in a mythical war with Dr. Doom, and then they shift over, and he moves to L.A. and he's all out of money. It's a great premise. He gets bought out by Obadiah Stane, which is in reality the guy from Tron, and he's like slumming around Compton, and he meets this dude that is off of his meds and is actually a brilliant engineer, and he goes to the projects there, and he realizes that he can turn his life around and turn this other guy's life around by inventing an automated pillbox that can identify people's faces and help you remember when you've taken your pill. So you're not like, oh, did I need to take, have I taken the red one yet? The blue one? It's quite smart. Like, that's the
hold
whole.
Hold on. This is where Iron Man is going.
Yeah, exactly. What's so cool about it is that so he's trying to get traction on this new company. And it's funny because they make it to be lucky he's going to invent a new suit of armor. And really, he's
inventing a pillbox.
He's invented an automated pillbox.
For your vitamins.
Exactly. So there, little does he know
he's
that they're
making technology for the 65 and up crowd.
Exactly. And guys that need to be on their meds.
It's because people who read the first Iron Man are now 65 and up.
Oh, they're older than that. They're dead. Iron Man started in like 1938. Come on.
My grandfather was born in 34. He's still alive.
So, well, okay. Fair enough. He read the first issue at 4.
He should have. No, but I'm saying it's easier to find it, like, when you're 10 to go back and read Iron Man 1.
Oh, okay. So then he doesn't realize that this organization called the Pride is secretly controlling all of Los Angeles. And so they try to kill him because they find out that Iron Man's in town. So they try to take him out. But he mistakes them for Obadiah Stane. He thinks it's really the other conglomerate. So they have this miscommunication of who knows what. And so they keep throwing all these wacky supervillains at him, like the Serpent Society shows up and it's guys like
and he defeats him with his pillbox?
Well, pretty much.
I would like to see that happen.
He's trained by Captain America and he's like in a junkyard, so he builds some stuff real quick.
Like, what's one
himself
of the villains that he fights?
Anaconda.
Anaconda. Anaconda, have you taken your
B12? Yeah, exactly.
My pill will tell you it have.
The Serpent Society is just about the dumbest group of supervillains you've ever seen. It's Adler and Rattlesnake and Cobra. Yeah, it's all these.
Cobra from G.I. Joe Cobra?
He looks exactly like Cobra from G.I. Joe.
Damn it.
It's good times all around.
We were talking a little bit, too, about this before the show, but I think it's interesting with the Thor movies and the Captain America movies. And isn't the Avengers? No, Avengers is coming out in 2012, right?
Yeah, because Thor's finally coming out this year.
Mm-hmm. And then a Captain America is coming out this summer.
Oh, that'll be great. You know, they tried one of those about 12 years ago, and it bombed.
Has Dolph Lundgren played every superhero? Let's see. Let's cover him. He's played He-Man,
yep.
The Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he play Captain America, which I don't think makes sense.
No. And then didn't he play Ghost Rider?
No, that was Nicolas Cage.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did he play Andy Kaufman?
That was Jim Carrey, not even a superhero.
Oh, my mistake.
But Andy Kaufman may have had a comic book, actually, now that I think about it. Which, by the way, again, sure, if you're a big fan of comic books, definitely, seriously, I can't say this enough, check out that, because there's some interesting commentary on how the comic book industry happened, mm-hmm. and you'll be very interested to find out that it was actually created by a couple of pornographers. Like, that's how the comic book industry...
That's what we learn. Every new technology for media is proprietated first by the porn industry.
Yeah, it was like this printing thing, and yeah. and these guys who were making money working with organized crime,
yeah.
and this other guy who had this great idea that had a niche product that nobody was dealing with, because the comics in the paper were very popular, like the little strip comics. And he was like, what if I made a whole magazine of that?
Yeah.
And as soon as they started, it blew up. And the very first character that they created was Superman.
Oh, yeah.
And it absolutely blew up to where, like, it's funny to watch, like, literally schools, hordes of children. Like he said, never have we seen, he said, I think one guy may have said that Harry Potter might have come close or whatever. Mm. But imagine, because the media was so small, like there was so limited access, that
eyes.
If there was one thing that every kid loved, then every kid loved
and
it.
See, I think we've talked about this before, is that sometimes our country forgets that it's not the 30s anymore, and you can't come up with that one great idea anymore, because Coke did the same thing. It stumbled upon this thing, and then one accidental success after another, they were able to bottle it, market it, sell it, and now Coca-Cola is what it is. And if you have some great idea for a new brownie, nobody cares, because everybody's blogging about their secret brownie recipe. You get online. You can't become a millionaire overnight with your secret brownie recipe or your ultimate character for Superman. Because you know what? Honestly, especially early Superman was one of the most blatantly obvious and boring heroes that ever existed.
That's what I thought.
He does everything that a two-year-old thinks of when they first draw a superhero. He shoots lasers from his eyes, and he breathes cold air, and he flies. Like, there's nothing clever or creative about it. It's only because he's been around for 80 years that he has any sort of depth or dimension.
Or that he's probably the first superhero ever that makes it be like, we love it. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not hard to understand why there would be kids who, when presented with the idea of somebody with superhuman powers for the very first time, and he's completely heroic and perfect
and
on every level.
It was 50 years before he fought another supervillain. That was how unclever they or uncreative they were. They invented a superhero that was fighting bank robbers and you know, Nazis. He didn't actually fight another superpower.
They also
villain.
Talk about in this movie that that essentially the World Wars almost destroyed comic books as we know them, because what happened was initially they were fighting, like what you were saying, bank robbers, and then supervillains started to show up and everything, and everybody was into it. But then when the world became centralized around the World War, it's like, okay, we're off fighting Nazis, and it's like, well, how? So they sent the superheroes to go fight the wars, and that's how, like, Captain America came to be and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But then they said when the Second World War came around, they were like, well, we need to support the troops, but it's hard, because if you send Superman to go fight the Nazis, the war's going to be over in a day or two. So you have to find this way of how does Superman deal with the fact that there's a world war. So everything was helping the troops. He's bringing sandwiches to the troops.
Right.
Which to me, like, as a modern, I think then as a kid, you're like, oh, that's cool. And maybe I'm not giving enough credit to people then. But I think as a modern kid, if you read that, you're like, why doesn't that dickhead put down the PB&J and go beat up some swastika people?
Pick up a whole tank and throw
take out the SS, jerkhole.
What was so fascinating is that during the 50s, readers could care less about costume superheroes. Like, there was absolutely no popularity for that. And you can see, like, 30s and 40s, Superman popular. Everything drops off the map in the 50s for adventure and science fiction comic books, and then picks back up in the early 60s is where Spider-Man...
It talks about why, and they said that the reason why is that in the 50s, a conservative feeling came over. Yeah. And so the idea of comic books was born for people to get out of being the status quo and try to fight to be better and improve themselves. And then the 50s were all about just, let's fit in.
Let's be normal.
And so, like, Superman... instead of, like, having these grandiose, like, fighting supervillains and stuff, the Superman comics were actually about him being a husband and having a super...
Right.
He had a super baby girl that he was, like... So he's dealing with regular guy issues as a married man and a family man.
It's like the boring parts of Incredibles.
Wonder Woman gave up all of her powers and decided to... this guy who created it has this really funny line in the documentary where he goes, I don't know what I was thinking. Like, where he's just like, he goes, here's what I did. He goes, I thought as a way of improving upon the Wonder Woman, storyline and character, which was about empowering women and strengthening them, and about women's values, that to give away her take away her superpowers and then give her a master or a guru that is a Chinese man when we're in the middle of the war on communism, and then also make her want nothing more than a boyfriend.
Like, right.
So the whole thing became about her finding a boyfriend, and then they got a chick involved at DC Comics, and then the first thing she did was like bring Wonder Woman back the way she used to be.
And Sarah Jessica Mars was born. Wait, what was the name of that show?
Know. Mars?
Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars.
Now, see, on the Marvel side, there's a comic book out called Atlas, and it's tried to get up off the ground a couple times, and it fails every time. But the premise was that during the 50s, there was this secret group of a secret superhero team that nobody knew about that was having adventures that weren't published in books. And they're using actual characters that were invented in the early 50s, like the human robot and the Uranian Marvel Boy and Venus, this woman goddess, Gorilla Man, all these like very early 50s superheroes. And they retroactively created this team. And it was actually based on a 1970s What If here book. In the book What If in Marvel says, you know, what if Spider-Man had six arms? What if Doctor Strange wasn't strange? What if the Avengers...
Doctor Ordinary.
Yeah, exactly. What if the Avengers fought crime in the 50s? 3D Man is one of them. So then they take that premise to the full and say, yeah, they did. And it's one of the most clever, simplest books ever written. And it just... I wish people would read it. And they've had to shelve it twice over the past 5 years because no one's buying it.
They talk about... Oh, gosh, I'm so angry that I can't remember this. But they talk about how... And I want to say that it was because of the invention of the Justice League, which originally the DC guys had the Justice Society.
Yeah.
And that was like what the Watchmen and all that were based on and came from or whatever. And this new guy came in and said, you know, I didn't like, he started just changing everything about the heroes. I think he was trying to give them a little bit more of a darker side or something like that. And that he, one of the things he said with the Justice Society, he goes, I never liked the word society. It sounded so plain, so plain and just wild. He goes, you want something that's like league. He goes, at the time, you know, baseball, football, these were things that kids could associate. So I was like, let's make it a league. Yeah, that sounds cool.
Still sounds kind of cool.
Badass, you know? Yeah. And he said that somehow he had talked to a guy who was then working for Marvel as a higher up. And he was talking about this idea, and he goes, so I indirectly also helped save Marvel, because virtually every comic producer at this time was going out of business because nobody was reading comic books because they had come so boring.
Right.
And at the same time, they couldn't, the comic books couldn't write what they wanted to write. And then there's this great, it breaks it down into like the actual, like the historical ages, like there's the Golden Age, the Silver Age, and the Bronze Age, and then the Modern Age of comics.
Right.
And that's how it follows this storyline within DC. And then there's this great moment in the 60s where you get these kids that actually grew up reading about these cool superheroes, and now they're the first generation that are actually getting to make the comics that they read and how they take it to this all new level. And then there's this guy who's like this amazing, brilliant mind, and I'm sorry. I'm just babbling. But go check that movie. It's The Secret Origin of DC Comics. It's a great movie.
What was that show called? The 70s version that we grew up with of Justice League. It was like
Super Friends. You're right. Super Friends. Yeah, Super Friends.
Yeah, they were pretty great. And meanwhile, in the halls of justice.
Yes, they talk about the Super Friends because that's a DC thing. They talk about the Justice League cartoon. I'm sorry. Because they had the Wonder Twins and all that stuff. And how that show made Aquaman a household name.
Oh, man.
In the great hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman.
He's just obvious hero man.
Wonder Woman.
She's an invisible jet that's drawn poorly.
Batman.
But Robin's with him, and they, like, teen of superheroes.
Aquaman!
And I'm sorry, but he is not... There's no superpower to Aquaman. They just need to retire him.
And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog.
You know what I just realized is that that sounds exactly like the introduction to Saturday Night Live, where you have the main cast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it's featuring.
I think that that was their inspiration.
Like, yeah. If you can, pull up the Saturday Night Live intro. Let's see. Because it's almost like that guy is actually being Dom Pardo. And he's just doing an impression of that guy.
Trying to find a. I wanted to find an old one, but we'll just do a new one.
I love it.
Math is hard. YouTube is a very difficult medium. We should have some interns.
BingTube, a decision video searching tool.
Yeah, that'd be good. Here, let's see.
Nothing?
Yep.
Thank you, and live from New York, it's Saturday night.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's YouTube, so it's a video of a video.
Yeah, video of somebody on their TV. That's not worth it. You get my point. But that's our show.
Hey.
We did it.
What would your superhero power be?
Oh, that's what I was thinking, is that I want to know what... Because there's four basic ways in this DC Universe Online that I read that you could travel. There's flying, super fast running. Oh, and there's another one that I'm missing.
Flying's the best. That was in Champions Online, and I was glad I chose it. So I recommend
or maybe it's just two. I don't know. There's another one that I can't remember. I was trying to think of like what are the options it has for picking your superpower. But I think I'm going to go. Here's what I would do. I think I'm more of like a Batman, Iron Man, because those as a kid, those were the guys that I really liked. I didn't like having a superhero power, but I did like having the ability of being really good at building stuff.
Right.
So I don't know if that's what I said every time I was asked this question or whatever, is that I never wanted to really fly. Because I felt like that there was a lot that would come with that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, imagine if you could fly and then it's like having a pickup and people want you to help them move. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, just take the couch to the new place. You could do it. Like, you don't need it. You don't need it. We don't have to get a truck. You could
I'm busy saving the orphanages and the oil refinery.
I know, but it's one Saturday, dude. We could lose like six orphans on a Saturday. I'm getting kicked out of my place, man.
All right,
kept your secret identity a secret for a long time.
Shh, we're in the middle of this coffee shop.
Now,
shut up.
Go rip off your shirt in that phone booth and get my couch to the new studio apartment.
I don't know why, but I thought this would be like a real quick one-word answer.
That's not how I roll. That's not how I roll. I'm a talker.
I notice.
Kevin, what would your superhero power
Multiplicity.
Be?
Here's the SNL theme song from 1975. On behalf of Justin Warshaw, I say, okay, bye.
How dare you? We have a closing that I could fit in. If you want to send us an email, it's show@secondfunniestpodcast.com, or you can call us at 408-228-4911. For all my stand-up dates, go to justincomedy.com. Don't forget to send us your questions or anything about Sly 4. That's coming up in 2 weeks on February 1st. We're going to have Bentley and Murray.
That'll be 1 week.
Here on the show. 1 week for them from this. Yes, you're right. I'm sorry.
Math is hard.
Math is hard. And so is timelines.
Yep.
And there's no Dom Pardo on this.
This is just a Saturday Night Live theme song, 1975.
Yeah, this is just the orchestration.
It's pretty cool, though.
Please go to secondfunniestpodcast.com. Tell your friends about the show. There's a link under each episode, so please don't send them maybe this one.
Yeah.
Unless it is your favorite.
Oh, it's pretty good. I
like
it.
Oh, yeah. No, here's the thing. I like it, but you never know what people think when they listen, especially if it's on the internet. That's a place of hate and criticism.
It's still the second funniest thing you've heard all day.
Exactly. I can guarantee that.
That's right.
For most of these people.
You live the first most boring life.
Right.
Until you listen to the second funniest podcast.
Boom. Then you're upgraded to number three. Because you can't beat us.
That's right.
So you're right. You're close behind us.
This is good. Have I not looked at you this entire podcast? I think I've just been staring straight at you.
No.
Yeah.
I think you've been looking at your computer, but maybe we haven't stared into each other's eyes while we talk.
It's been a while.
It makes me feel sexy.
It's good.
I'm slightly aroused, I'll be honest. On behalf of my good friend, tell people about the show. That's what I was going to say. It helps us. And next week, Bentley and Murray.
Yep.
This is, we're doing the Ryan Seacrest of constantly like, hey, maybe what if February 1st we go, Valentine's Day special. They're going to hate us.
And then we'll count down with Dick Clark. 8, 4, 12.
You're Ryan Seacrest. I'm Dick Clark.
3.
I love you, Ryan.
3.
Ryan.
2. All right, Dick Clark, everybody.
Daddy needs a cookie. I'm having my good friend Kevin Moses, Justin Worship, saying, okay, bye.